to what we don't always see. So I want to just read you a little bit. The Buddha spoke about the inevitability of loss in a variety of ways throughout his teaching life. He also described a way to practice with the fact of loss. The practice is called the Five Recollections and is described in the Upajjhatana Sutta, and then it's the Five Recollections that we just practiced with. The Buddha encouraged everyone, lay and ordained, woman or man, to contemplate these five realities on a daily basis. His awareness of these facts was a catalyst for him in his yearning for ultimate freedom. In the story of the Buddha's life, it is said that what most motivated him to leave the familiarity and comfort of his daily life, which held for him a future of wealth and power, was coming face to face with someone old, someone sick, and someone dead. The contact with loss in the forms of old age, sickness, and death motivated him to change his life into one that held little of the security to which he had been accustomed. And yet he knew he needed to make a leap if he were ever to find the peace he was seeking. Our path is the same. Contemplating these realities of life motivates us to make necessary changes. Allowing these contemplations to sink into the heart is itself a deeply beneficial practice. Our inquiry begins with the first four of the five recollections. They are facts of life, even if we are inclined to do our best to ignore them. The practice of deliberately bringing them to mind and reflecting on their reality may seem counterintuitive. Why would anyone want to reflect on these particular realities? Would not doing so make us gloomy or even depressed? So it may seem, but the fact is that we can save ourselves a great deal of suffering if we choose to live in accordance with them. Contemplating these recollections encourages us to awaken from denial and avoidance. The recollections offer a pathway of non-attachment and equanimity, and a deeper, more sustained appreciation of this moment now. A lightness of being emerges when we face what is undeniably so. If we take these recollections up as a practice, we are deliberately calling these realities forth instead of simply being at their mercy, overwhelmed by the thoughts and emotions they activate. We take up the truths of the five remembrances as a practice, as a way to deepen our insight. Through practice, we can come to see that each one manifests in both personal and universal ways. Each one is either true for me right now or will be true for me in the future. And at the same time, they are all true for all of us. When practicing the contemplations, it is sometimes beneficial to use the pronoun I, and at other times we. Using we helps us expand our perspective and realize we are not alone. This realization reminds us that it is not a fault to get sick and to age. We are not separate from nature. Ajahn Mahabua expressed this understanding poignantly when he was in a potentially life-threatening situation. During his life as a monk in the forests of Thailand, tigers were abundant. Monks often heard the roar of tigers in the distance as they sat meditating under their mosquito nets. Ajahn Mahabua once came upon a tiger while walking in meditation in the forest. He met this tiger with these words, "Greetings, comrade, in old age, sickness, and death." He was not eaten because he lived to tell the tale. Perhaps the tiger felt their kinship as beings. In any case, the tiger went on its way. When I was in Thailand, I heard this particular story and other tiger stories as well. I was there too late. The tigers were gone by the time I got there, so I was more dealing with scorpions and bats and rats and poisonous snakes and these kinds of things. So they felt like they were my tigers, you know. But everybody's got their tigers. This is such a dramatic story about a real tiger. But everybody deals with their own sense of what your tiger is. So comrade in old age, sickness, and death, this sense of kinship rather than what it usually does, which is to make us feel separated and alone. And sometimes this really odd sense of shame that we shouldn't get sick, we shouldn't get old, we shouldn't die, we shouldn't lose what we have. And yet, this is the way things are. So taking it up as practice is enormously valuable. All right, so opening up, I just want to hear from you. And anything on your mind, anything that this brought up, any way that you worked with it? Yeah.
Yes, the first one really didn't resonate with me.
Yeah.
But the other ones did, and what happened was when I went to we, I thought of a friend who was sick. Mm. I realized I've had so much confusion with the situation, and what came was really this tremendous sense of warmth and that there's nothing wrong
and that actually
extended to the others, that there wasn't anything wrong in this kind of equanimity or this holding that it was natural took the pain away, that there was it's nothing personal.
Right.
Compassion entered in that, and it's
Right, exactly. To just comment on the fact that you didn't connect with the first one, that's kind of the way this thing goes. You know, some of them just, either you just don't connect with and you will when you do it again or 2 years from now or whatever, or you're just really okay with it. Yeah, and that's possible too.
Curiosity.
But it's different. Our conditioning varies from person to person. So, it's hard to say, but you don't want to make anything out of it. Just, I would encourage you, if you take on this practice at all, to include it. And just be curious, as you're saying. Yeah. And then it's interesting, with the second one, it informed the others. You know, you had an insight about the naturalness of the body belonging to nature and being out of our control. And so that actually informed the other of the recollections. You know, we get an insight in one area, and it flows into other areas of our lives as well, if we're open. And that's an interesting thing to just take note of, you know, because it was an insight really about the other recollections as well. But you didn't know that until you got to them. Yeah. It's so, you know, the thing about the situation, about your friend, we can get angry at ourselves for being sick and feel isolated and alone and all of that, but we can also get angry at others, for getting sick. And this alleviates that. This brings us back into wisdom and compassion, which is really, you know, how we want to live. We just forget. And the veils of delusion and confusion and ignorance kind of take off and have a life of their own. They pick up steam. You know, and this is like an intervention. It brings us back home to what is true. And it brings us back home to our own intrinsic wisdom and compassion. So that when we're with somebody that is sick or that we have to take care of or that we need to relate to in a certain way, we can let them be themselves. You know, we can let the natural be so. And then we have actually more energy for taking care of them. You know, we actually have more energy in a caretaking role. You know, because we're not so involved in it ourselves. Yeah. Does any of that hit home? Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. Yes, and then we'll go to you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because it affects me right away. I mean, it's just
Yeah. Oftentimes we see it when we're sick, the harshness. Yeah, I mean, sometimes that's a way to see it, or feeling like we're a burden to others, you know, who have to take care of us or whatever. Different ways of seeing it. In the hospital, you shouldn't die. Right, success and failure. I mean, I think it's where Sangha comes in, that we help one another with our kind of growing capacity to keep our hearts open, come what may. You know, it's vibrational. It's where we can attune. Something so interesting that the Buddha said, I think, is around trying to hang out with people that have the qualities that you value in yourself. Like, you know, if you want to learn how to be impatient, to value, you know, to hang out with somebody who's impatient. If you want to learn how to steal a car, to hang out with people who steal cars. He didn't say that because there weren't cars, but you know what I mean. If you want to keep your heart open, if you want to learn patience, to hang out with people who you feel have those qualities, because then they echo your own intrinsic qualities. Yeah, and then we have the strength to be with anybody. Because, of course, it's not about defensiveness or protecting ourselves from the sorrow in this world. But it's having the strength to be able to be with one another with kindness instead of being lost in our shame and our self-criticism and our sense of unworthiness. And, you know, may all beings be happy. You have to include yourself as a being. Yeah, yeah. It's not out there. It's of a whole. Yeah. Good. Yeah.
So you found the kind of contrast between when I had doing the I and the we.
Oh, yeah.
Like when I did the air and sickness, the I part was okay, but I don't know. We part went through two kind of transition. One is the we in abstract.
The we what?
We in abstract.
Oh, abstract.
Just everybody in the face.
Yeah, yeah.
That kind of made it, you know, sorry, I will grow old.
Yeah.
But when I made the we into specific, like I thought about my daughter.
Perfect. Perfect. I mean, that's going right for the heart of it, you know. Like a transition between the I and the we, and it feeling different in terms of the I and the we. And so when you got to the we, choosing or the mind alighting on your daughter, Right, yeah. And then that, you know, I was saying that that's to the heart of it, because children, daughter, you know, are most people that we feel. I'm not saying only children, but the person that we feel most, that are most vulnerable, that we're responsible for. It goes right to the heart of this. So it's interesting to me that your daughter arose. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's good practice that your daughter arose. Yeah. And so how did that go when she came up?
That is a very friend of sadness.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Like, we in the abstract, that basically kind of generalize.
Right, right.
The truth.
Yes, yes.
Then when I'm able to be the specific, then
yes.
I accept the truth that I just want before I get it, so naturally.
Exactly, exactly.
We make to be the specific, and then you accept that I did true work.
Yes. Yes, yes. So, what's being said is that the we sounded really abstract or felt really abstract, but then daughter, you know, the specificity of it, that then it was alive. You know, it was real. It was authentic. Yeah, and that's always what you want to do. Is this whole thing has to be alive and authentic, and touch. You know, touch what feels like the third rail at times. And yet, if you bring the allies of metta and compassion in with you, something can change, you know, in the way that we want it to change. Yeah, yeah. Thank you. Good. Yes.
I found a strong sense of urgency in both.
Yeah. Yes, 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 right. And that's what this is also designed to bring up, is a sense of spiritual urgency. You know, sometimes we have worldly urgency and it does us no good at all. But spiritual urgency is the recognition that this moment really does matter, because we don't know how conditions are going to change. And in being present and awake now, we can understand things differently. So that when things do happen as they do, we have our inner resources there, really kind of available to us if we're allowing life to use us well now. Yeah, yeah. So some vega, it's a good word to know, because the word urgency doesn't always sound so great in the translation of it. Yeah. I remember teaching a weekend retreat back home, and there was all of this urgency, urgency, urgency for many weekends before this particular retreat. And then this particular retreat, everybody was like, everything's going great, da 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 da. And it was like sinking into this complacency, you know? And then I started like really going at it with the spiritual urgency, which Krishnamurti talks about quite a bit, and it's quite helpful. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's not specifically tied to death. No, it's a sense of the fact that we do not know what's going to happen in the next moment, and so we had better be we had better practice with great relaxation, of course, and and a sense of how important it is to work with our minds. Yes.
You said this before, but could you go back to hanging out with people that
oh, yes. Right.
Value?
Mm-hmm.
Is that, just to clarify, is that so that you to strengthen those qualities in ourselves?
Yes.
So that we can then go out and hang out with people.
Definitely.
The qualities that I have that I don't want to see in myself. Is that the general gist of it? Just the strength and the resolve within myself?
Yes.
So mm-hmm. When I am with people that trigger my reactions, I can ground myself back. Is that the general
Yes, but because we're always going to have people in our life that rub up against us, or that we rub up against. I mean, it's so interesting because we think of other people as difficult, but we hardly ever think of ourselves as somebody's difficult person. But everybody is somebody's difficult person. You know, the Dalai Lama is somebody's difficult person. It's usually much more than one person, you know? But when you think of other people using you, putting you in that category, it's really interesting. I also think it's good to put oneself in the category of difficult person, because sometimes we really are our own most difficult person. And we really are in reality, always, because we have to live with ourselves full time, and others we can come and go from. yeah. So we have to vary that, you know. It's we also want to work with another difficult person in that category, because we relate to ourselves differently than we relate to someone problematic. Yeah. But in terms of your question, which has to do with the why do we want to be with people who have the qualities that we wish to have in ourselves? We rub off on each other. You know, we influence each other. And I think this is one reason why we want to practice, because our misery rubs off on others too. You know, we can't help it. It's not our fault that happens, but that is the way things are. That when we're caught in within ourselves, we can't help but be self-centered. It's not possible, because we're trying to attend to our own pain in that moment, and there can be a tension around it. So, you know, this is we're doing this not just for ourselves, for everybody, and for everybody in particular that we come in contact with, because our tension is going to be reflected in the relationships that we have. And if we can find a sense of ease of well-being within ourselves, we are offering that as well. Not by teaching or doing anything or, you know, nothing formal, but just because all of us are visible, we take up space. You know, we might not want to at times, but we take up space. Yeah. I don't know why the space is over here. Yeah. And it does impact those times when we are with people that are difficult for us, that we are more likely to remember our own intrinsic wisdom and compassion and then act like that. You know, not go with the flow and cooperate with the difficulties and the problems, but actually step out of the fray and bring empathy and understanding and, you know, not any sense of separation, but be able to, in a sense, hold our ground of wisdom and compassion in the midst of the difficult. Yeah, kind of.
So it's not necessarily avoidance.
No, it is not avoidance, although I was joking last night about wise avoidance, which is not really a joke, because there are times that we have to step aside because we are too overwhelmed or too caught up in, and we need to step aside, wisely avoid, so that we can kind of reconsider our options, remember who we are, be able to respond with creativity instead of conditioning. And so we get out of the fray with the understanding that we're going to have to jump in again, you know, that it's not a lifetime of avoidance. But people love this thing, wise avoidance. You know, I'm wisely avoiding. You know? And it really isn't wise avoidance. It's just denial. Yeah. So it's the wise part in this is really important. Yeah. It's not avoidance. It's wise avoidance. Yeah. Yeah. But it can be extremely skillful to do that at particular times when we just need to breathe. We need to come back to Buddha nature. We need to remember intrinsic wisdom and compassion. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It is 12:30. Is everybody hungry? Yes. Okay. That was an of a of agreement with that. Okay, so let's have lunch.